So let's say you set a goal for a year from now to accomplish something important to you. How do you know that you're successful tomorrow and next week and next month and next quarter? So many times when I talk with successful entrepreneurs, they're unhappy and frustrated until they hit their goal, and then they ask the question, now what? Today we're going to talk about a better path by reviewing the book Atomic Habits with Sean Kincaid. We're going to talk about the daily inputs that you can focus on in your life so you can be happy every day on the pursuit to your goal that means so much to you. All this and more on today's episode of Let's Make Work Optional.
Welcome to this episode of Let's Make Work Optional with True Wealth & Company in Overland Park, Kansas. True Wealth & Company incorporates strategies and products of the super rich to help you reach your financial goals and make work optional. And now, here's Brian Sarf, President and CEO of True Wealth & Company.
Welcome to Let's Make Work Optional. I'm Brian Sarf. We are here every Tuesday at 5 a.m., and I hope you are too. You can find the Work Optional podcast on iTunes, Anchor.fm, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Today, we are going to visit with Sean Kincaid, and we're going to do a business book review and share with you the wonderful secrets from the book Atomic Habits, written by James Clear. Welcome, Sean. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You are very welcome. You're always insightful. We love your approach to your business, love the consulting counseling you give to your clients, and especially what I think is pretty awesome is the time you take to read these books and put them through. I've been to a number of your book review sessions you hold monthly.
Right.
And how can somebody sign up if they want to come to the monthly event to network and also learn these different concepts?
If they're on my newsletter, which you can do just by going to our website at aspirekc.com, you can sign up for the website or for the newsletter. Or you can actually sign up from the website as well. There's a link there that allows you to sign up for whatever next month's book is.
Do you have a certain day of the month that you hold book club on?
Theoretically, it's the last Thursday of the month. But when you get into the holidays or you get into different things, it doesn't always work out that way. So it varies a little bit.
Today, we're going to talk about a book, Atomic Habits. I've read this book. I love it. I'm shifting my thoughts and everything this direction. People I've shared some of the concepts with in here have been really motivated by it, and I'm excited to listen to you walk through the book and talk through the points as we go into here. So give us an overview of James Clear and the book Atomic Habits.
This is one of the books that probably one of the most engaging books that I've read in the last couple of years that really stood out to me, really resonated. And some of it, when I think about this book, the first thing I think about is the idea that you talk about people hitting a home run. In your world, maybe it's they made a great trade, they made a lot of money on something. And a lot of times we think about success that way, right? You know, that you see that person that just jumped onto the scene and they had this huge success and it was a hit single or a great movie or a home run, whatever it was. And the reality is that that's not success. That may be one example of somebody that did something great, but it's not sustainable. Because it's not something that you can necessarily rely on. So if you got lucky, or if you just happened to be in the right place at the right time and something happened, a year from now, you're not still going to be successful unless you just got lucky again, which isn't something you really want to catch up on. So to me, success is really more about, it's not a destination, it's a journey. And if you really want to be successful, then it's all about figuring out what are the small things that I can do every single day that are going to keep pointing me in the right direction and making me better. And that's how people end up being successful. And that's the essence of this book. James Clear is an interesting guy. In high school, was hit by a bat. He was on his high school baseball team, and he was in the on-deck circle, and the guy batting actually let go of the bat and hit him in the face.
Oh, my God.
And he ended up basically crushing in his skull, going to the emergency room, and ended up in a coma for a little while, and he was near death. And they ended up being able to treat it, and he was able to come back, but it took him a year or two just to recover. And so he was a kid that always wanted to be a professional baseball player. This set back his career quite a bit. He still ended up getting invited to walk on at a small university, and he kind of took this whole setback as an opportunity to figure out, well, how do I go from here? How do I get better? And so at the university, instead of going out with all his friends and doing all the things that you do at university, he actually buckled down. He did the little things that he could control. He kept his room clean. He ate right. He went to bed when he was supposed to. That allowed him to get control of his grades, allowed him to get control of practice. And he started doing extra practice, taking extra batting, extra throwing, all the little things that you could do as a player. And by the time he graduated, he was an All-American, and he had set several records at the university for his baseball career. He wasn't good enough to go pro, but he achieved his potential.
Well, and he started a blog from all of his experiences and began sharing that, and now has hundreds of thousands of people that follow.
If not millions, I think. I think he's up to millions. Yeah, wow. That was his next step, was then to basically take that mindset of how do I improve myself, and that became kind of his goal, is to be able to share that with others and to figure out and answer the question, you know, what is success and how do we succeed, and that became kind of the theme of what he does. So from that, he wrote the blog, which eventually became the book. He's also created an offering or a product called Habits Academy, and he has a couple other things that he's able to monetize. So he's an entrepreneur. He's got all this stuff going on in the background. It's pretty impressive.
That's great. Where do you want to start with Atomic Habits as we begin to dig in? What's a good place to begin?
A couple things. He's got kind of a precursor to it, and then he gets into the four laws of behavior.
Okay.
But the precursor stuff, I think, is some of the most interesting ideas. It's really some of the big ideas that you need to have in place before the rest of it really makes sense. So the first one is the idea of forgetting goals. Instead, you need to focus on systems. Now, I think a lot of times people think about success, or they think about moving forward. I need to set some goals and I need to really focus on that. The problem is, when you focus on a goal, you're not really happy until you achieve it. And then when you do achieve it, it's kind of like, okay, well, what's next? Where do I go from here? A better option, which is what he's recommending, is to focus on the process, or to focus on the systems. If you look at football teams, the goal is to win the Super Bowl. The system is, what are the plays that they have in place? What does the offense do? What does the defense do? Those are the processes and the systems. If you focus on those and get those right, the winning will take care of itself. And so he lists out four reasons why it's better to focus on systems rather than goals. Winners and losers all have the same goals, which I thought was really a good way of thinking about it.
They all want to win.
Exactly. Now, do they all win? No.
No.
And so goal doesn't make nearly as much sense. Achieving a goal is only a momentary change. And so kind of back to the point of, okay, great, you achieved it. What now? Mm-hmm. It ends up being something that you have to keep refocusing on.
And you feel like you have to continue to push the envelope, work extra hours, put the effort in to get there to the goal. So you're kind of unhappy, your life's out of balance a little bit while you're solely focused on this one goal. And then you have that moment of celebration when you achieve it.
Right. And then that passes.
And then what's next?
Right. And it really ends up becoming a very unhealthy process, because the goal just keeps getting moved farther out. And so you're never truly very happy about the whole thing. If you can focus on the process, then you can really enjoy your progress along the way, not just, you know, what happens at the end. Goals can restrict your happiness, which was the third one. That was the stuff we just talked about. And the fourth one is, goals are at odds with your long-term progress. And that gets to the idea that, say you want to be a healthier person and you want to run, and you're going to run a marathon or you're going to run a 5K. I'm going to train up until I run that 5K. I'm going to run it. I'm going to succeed. Yay. And then I stop training. And now I'm no longer actually moving forward on that path. I stopped because I hit my goal. Whereas if I was just focusing on running and being a healthy person, if that's what I wanted to do, then I would approach it differently.
For all this to work, is you have to have the reward system in place so that it's immediate, specific, and clear, that you reward yourself along the way to celebrate the daily habits or the daily inputs that you are measuring, to know that if I do this every day of the week, do this every week, every month, every quarter, then I know I'm on pace and I can be excited about it.
Right.
And I may hit the goal early. It may take me longer than when I want to get it, but I'm on the right path to get there.
And as long as I'm enjoying what I'm doing, if I'm enjoying the process, if I'm really buying into it and doing it, isn't that the point?
You have to have the joy and the happiness in the pursuit.
It can't just be what's at the end. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really powerful. The second thing that, and I've shared this with several clients, and this has been something that's impacted me, but I've also had several clients say this really impacted them. The idea of outcome-based habits versus identity-based habits. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times people think they want to change. They will start with the outcome that they want. I want to lose 30 pounds. I want to make X amount of money, whatever it is. And you try to build that as a goal and you build behavior around that and you try to go after that. The problem is when you do that, it becomes just like what we were talking about before. When you're chasing that goal, you might be able to just muscle through and lose that 30 pounds because you adopted this unnatural diet. But at the end of that, you're going to hit your goal and you're going to be like, oh, thank God, I don't have to do that anymore.
Go back to normal.
And you're going to automatically go back to what you did before, which is why when people lose 30 pounds, they usually gain all that back really quickly. You didn't actually change anything. And so it's the difference between...
But you achieved your goal.
You did.
I achieved my goal of losing 30 pounds.
And it didn't really help you because you went right back to it.
But you didn't change your system. And you didn't reward yourself along the way for, if I can walk 2 miles a day, walk a mile, run a mile, and then I can run 2 miles, that you should celebrate the progress in the system of getting there.
And even deeper than that. So I think that's a great point because he talks about the idea of outcomes, processes, and then in the middle, think of this as a circle. Mm-hmm. The outside of the circle is outcome. The middle level of the circle is processes. And the middle of the circle is your identity.
Okay.
And so at the end of the day, and you're right about celebrating the process, but the even deeper than that is, what's my identity? What do I believe? Who am I at the core? And if you can figure that out, then all of a sudden that drives behaviors. And those are behaviors that become permanent.
Give some examples.
Instead of saying I want to lose 30 pounds, I want to be a healthy person. And so I'm going to start doing things that a healthy person is going to do. I'm going to eat right. I'm going to exercise. That's what a healthy person does. And so I start identifying myself as a healthy person, and all of a sudden everything else becomes a lot easier. A great example that he uses in the book, imagine two people that are standing outside and somebody comes up to them and offers them a cigarette. And the first person says, no thanks, I'm trying to quit. And the other person says, no thanks, I'm not a smoker. Which one of those two people do you think a year from now is not going to be smoking?
That second one doesn't have a way out. They've identified as a non-smoker.
Right.
The other one still says, I may smoke again sometime, just not today.
Right. Yeah. And so they don't have that identity. And so taking on that identity of being a healthy person or being somebody that runs or being somebody that invests their money and saves more than they spend, whatever it is, there's all sorts of angles to this. But that idea of the identity-based outcome, focusing on your identity, who do you want to be? And that will get you to where you want to what you have, to me, is really, really powerful.
It is.
If you take nothing else out of that book, to me, that was worth the price of admission right there.
So what's next here? I see that we want to talk about these four steps. How do we create a good habit, or how do we get rid of a bad habit? Walk us through that process.
So he talks about the four, what he calls the four laws of behavior change. And he really based this off of the idea of a habit loop. And there's a book called The Power of Habit that he actually kind of used as a starting point, but he built on it. And really, when you think about it, habits basically boil down to starting with a cue. So there's something that triggers you, which leads to a craving, which leads to a response, which leads to a reward. And so that's called the habit loop. If you think about it from a behavioral, psychological presence, that's how we work. So, you know, an example would be that every day at 3 o'clock, my wife puts cookies out on the table. That's the cue. The craving is, man, I really like those cookies and they smell great. The response is, I'm going to eat one. And the reward is, wow, that was a really good cookie. I enjoyed that. That would be an example of a habit loop. Not a healthy habit loop, but a habit loop nonetheless. So he uses that construct as a way to come up with what he calls the four laws of behavior change. And so the first law is, if you want to create a good habit, you make it obvious. If you want to break a bad habit, you make it invisible. The second law, make it attractive. The third law, make it easy. The fourth law, make it satisfying. And then obviously the opposite of that is if you want to break habits. So we're going to go through all of those in a little more detail just to give you a better feel for it.
I like the bad habit, though, is if you make it invisible, you make it unattractive, you make it difficult, and you make it unsatisfying, then you'll begin to break those bad habits because you eliminate the cue. You're not going to get the reward from it. It's more difficult to follow through with.
And it's a little bit of a game. And it's interesting because the way that we're physically wired, if you develop a habit, it will be with you for life. it's always there. You can't really get rid of one. But what you can do is figure out how to stop triggering it or how to stop continuing to make it deeper. Mm-hmm. So if, and luckily I've never had this, but if you're a smoker, that habit of smoking, 20 years later, you might still be triggered by whatever it was that triggered you before, if it was a deep enough habit. And it would still be there. You just have to basically set things up so that you don't trigger it anymore. That's the drawback, is that you can't ever really get rid of a habit. You can just avoid it.
Minimize it or get rid of it. So what's the first law of behavior change to make it obvious? Let's talk through that.
So the idea behind this one is basically making the unconscious conscious. And that allows you, by pulling things up, it allows you to be much more aware of what your behaviors are. So the reality is, and I don't remember the exact percentage, but like 43-45% of your daily behaviors are actually habits. Mm-hmm. They're things that you aren't even aware that you're doing. So think about when you drove into work today. More than likely, you can't really remember that trip because it's just a habit. It's ingrained. That's what you do. You get in your car, you start driving. It's actually a little scary because you do that on automatic almost. Brushing your teeth.
It's your morning ritual.
Exactly. I mean, whatever it is.
You get out of bed. You have a certain order of things you do. You go to the bathroom. Like in my house, I go to the bathroom. I let the dogs out. I feed the dogs, lock them in the kitchen. Then I go upstairs, shower, get ready. You got your morning habit that you walk through.
And there's a lot of power in that. And the fact that it's a habit means that it doesn't take in any energy or any thought from you. And that's a good thing. The flip side is that when you get 43% of your daily activities fall into that category, you really don't know what you're doing. You go through your day and there's big chunks of time where you're not really in control. So one of the ways to make behavior change is that you want to make it obvious. And so by doing that, by calling it out, you make it much more conscious rather than unconscious.
Talk about the habit scorecard. I like that, of having a visual scorecard when you're trying to make it obvious and keep track of what you're doing.
Yeah. So one of the suggestions he has is to basically go through and try to write down all of your habits that you have, all of the activities, all the things that you do in a given day, and write down, is this a good habit? Is this a neutral habit, or is it a bad habit? And obviously, subjectively, that's up to you, but you can decide, is this helping me be who the person I want to be, or is it working against being the person who I really want to be?
That'd be a long list if I've never sat down to write down all of my habits each day, but
I haven't tried to do the full list, but you start thinking through kind of things that you do, and you could even start with a smaller list, and I think there's value in that.
That makes the unconscious conscious. Mm-hmm. You know, we do the same thing when we're doing financial planning in the beginning with somebody, is, what do you spend? Yep. Well, I spend $6,000 a month. Well, do you really?
Right.
Because it seems like you're probably a little higher than that. Get out your credit card statement, get out your bank statement, start writing out all the things that you do. And when you go through it, it can be $2,000 or $3,000 more a month for some folks. And they had no idea, but seeing it, they immediately go, that's ridiculous. I had no idea we're spending that much money on whatever it is.
Right.
We're going to fix that and change that. But I did not know that that was there.
And you're making the unconscious conscious. You're bringing it to light. And I think anytime you start tracking something, all of a sudden, you become much more aware of it and you determine, is this good or bad? If you're going to change the behavior, you first have to be aware of what it is.
So how do we start a new habit? What do we do to do that?
So his recommendation for starting a habit is to be really explicit about it. So you have to tie it to a cue. There has to be some sort of trigger. So his recommendation is to, he calls it an implementation intention. When situation X arises, I will perform response Y. If I wanted to start a new habit of meditating, when I have my coffee in the morning, then I will set aside a minute to go through a meditation process. So that's my intention. But if I don't tie it to something, maybe a better example for me would be, I want to start going to the gym. So Monday at 3:00, I will go and I will do 30 minutes on the elliptical. That's something that's tangible that you can really get around, and it's got a trigger of Monday at 3:00. That's what I'm going
to
do.
But you can also, for somebody who hasn't been to the gym in a long time, going to the gym can be ridiculously overstimulating. So it may be that I need to put on my gym clothes.
Right.
And I put on my gym clothes, and then I can.
And he talks about that later. That really falls into make it easy. But yeah, that's another example of, you know, whatever it is you want to start. Yeah. Don't do too much. If you can just get things rolling, you can build on it.
If I'm going to go out and run a marathon,
you're not going to do a day one.
I'm not built to run it, but somebody else who's more fit than I am could get there faster. It doesn't mean right. that both of us can't. It's just I have to approach it differently
right.
as I go run a marathon and somebody else, whatever, a different path. But we can still both be successful in running it if that is something that we identify as being a runner and that's who we want to be.
Right.
And we want to set that system in place.
The idea is to tie it back to that habit loop, which is how our brains are actually wired. So the idea of having a trigger or a cue, having a craving, having the reward and the response, that's what all this stuff is built around, is that idea. Mm-hmm. One of the suggestions that he makes that I like is the idea of habit stacking. Mm. So if you want to add a new habit, sometimes it's easiest just to tag it on to one that you already have. And so in the morning, if you wanted a habit of writing a note for your daughter, do it as part of your morning ritual, figure out a place in there and just add it into that morning ritual already. And that way you've already got the triggers in place and it becomes just an addition to what you're already doing.
Nice.
And it's much easier to build onto. And then finally, in terms of this one, and to me, this is critical, design your environment for success. And this is true for building new habits, but it's also really important for breaking old ones. At the end of the day, the whole concept of willpower is kind of crap.
You only have so much.
You only have so much.
And it's draining. If it's not in your power zone, it's draining, and you'll wipe your energy out,
if you're counting on willpower to get you there, you're going to be disappointed sooner rather than later. So really, self-control is all about avoiding temptation, not putting yourself in front of it and saying no to it.
So hide the cookies.
Exactly. So get rid of the cookies. If you are somebody that is frustrated because you keep checking your phone and checking social media, his recommendation is during the week, remove the app from your phone, and then if you really want to, reinstall it on the weekend. If you make it difficult enough, if you take it out of your environment, you're not going to be triggered to go do it. And so you've got, likewise, if you want to start something healthy, if you want to start eating fruit instead of cookies, put fruit out on the table. If you want to start playing your guitar more because you're trying to learn, put the guitar in the middle of the room. It's things like that where you change your environment is going to have more impact on your behavior than almost anything
else. And we're so visually stimulated. I mean, that's where most of our cues are visual.
Right.
Some are certainly smells that we smell, cookies, you smell. I know there's a plastics company in Cape Girardeau where I grew up, and when I smell the plastics from that, I immediately think of baseball.
Right.
Because we had to smell that smell every day played baseball, and if I ever smell it, immediately I go back to playing Pony League baseball as a kid at Arena Park, and I can describe the park, the trees, the people, the layout, everything, because it was so powerful,
yeah.
That piece. But it's but visual is most of it. And if you hide stuff in the pantry or the cupboard.
If you can't see it, you're not going to want it.
Yeah. So if you want to take your vitamins every day, don't hide them. Keep them out.
Yep.
You can put them up when company comes, but it reminds you need to do that every day.
So that ties into the second law of behavior change, which is make it attractive.
Okay. How do we do that?
And it was interesting to me. He used the idea of food scientists have figured this out a long time ago.
Sure, so they have.
You look at a bag of Doritos. That bag of Doritos has been engineered by scientists with millions of dollars of research put into it to basically exactly hit the spot for crunchiness and saltiness and flavor and whatever to make it attractive.
There's a whole book called Salt, Sugar, Fat. The entire book is just talking about, it's not a health book.
No.
It's talking about how they market foods and how many billions of dollars have been spent to make that Dorito taste and crunch just perfectly in your mouth. You get the exact sensation that, man, I cannot eat just one. I have to eat like 50.
Yeah, which is why you buy the bag, which, you know, so they've figured out how to modify your behavior whether you want to or not.
And more
so,
in processed foods.
Right.
Than in anything else.
It's usually not. So it's not like they're doing that with a tomato or something healthy. They're doing it with stuff that probably isn't all that great for you.
If you look at a 12-ounce glass of apple juice, you can drink that pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But if you had to eat the amount of apples it took to make 12 ounces of apple juice, you'd shut down because nature put a ton of fiber with it.
Right.
And each apple doesn't taste the same, but it's a lot easier to drink the juice that's concentrated than to eat the entire apple. And nature gave it to you in servings for purpose, but we've used manufacturing and processing to really, really intensify the experience with food, and it's hard to shut some of those things off.
So that's kind of his point, is that the scientists have figured out how to make this stuff attractive, and yeah. It drives behavior. They know it drives behavior because it drives revenue. So how can you use that idea for yourself? And one of the suggestions he makes is this idea of what he calls temptation bundling. And the example that he uses, and basically the idea is, if you want to start doing something, attach it to something that you already enjoy doing. And so his example is that there was a guy in Ireland who really liked watching Netflix, and he needed to work out more, so he basically ended up creating this bike that powered the TV, but only while he was riding the bike. And so he was able to watch Netflix, but only while he was riding the bike.
That's fantastic.
He's actually turned it into a product, and you can buy them, I guess.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah. But that's the idea behind temptation bundling. So for me, that hit home because I'd like to identify as somebody that's healthy. I don't necessarily love to go work out, but I do love listening to books. And so for me, when I go to the gym, that's my opportunity to shut down from everybody else. I listen to a book, and oh, by the way, I happen to be on the elliptical while I'm doing it.
Do you do business books or personal books, or what do you listen to?
For the gym, I actually do more personal books just because they're more fun. So a thriller or, you know, whatever might be out there.
Sure.
Either way, it's a chance for me to just, that's something I enjoy doing. And the fact that I do it at the gym, which I wouldn't normally enjoy if that's all I was doing, by putting those together, I now get to the point where if I don't get to go to the gym, I'm kind of crabby about it because that's part of my thing.
But then you have to have also the discipline that you can't listen to those books doing anything else but walking at the gym. Listen to it in the car and listen here and there, then you don't have the pull to the gym.
It's because it's still something I enjoy, even though I might have listened to it somewhere else. I built a situation where I really enjoy that. And oh, by the way, it helps me break a sweat too.
Those are good bundles.
So yeah, that's the idea. The second piece of making it attractive, which made a lot of sense to me, was the idea of peer pressure.
Mm.
And so this gets back to that idea of we identify with people around us. And if you want to have better behavior, go hang out with people that already have those behaviors. So if you want to be healthy, go hang out with people who are healthy. If you want to make money, go hang out with people who make money. It makes a lot of sense, but to do it on purpose and to do it because of behavior change is a little different way of looking at it. And so I think he makes a really compelling case that we're driven as people. We're a tribal community. You tend to believe and see things around you of what people around you do. And you take on the habits and the activities and the behaviors mm-hmm. of people you surround yourself.
Your peer group is very motivating and very inspiring for good and bad.
Exactly.
And sometimes you have to look at the group that you have and say, you know,
they may not be serving you.
Yes.
And it may be time to change. Mm-hmm. And that's a really hard thing to do. But if you want to change your behavior, that may be one of the things you have to do.
Yeah.
And then finally, the last one, in terms of making it attractive, you can change your perspective. And one way to look at this is instead of saying, I have to go exercise, I get to go exercise.
It gives you the power of the choice.
Right.
Rather than giving up the choice to something outside of your control. And having control is huge.
And it feels like semantics, but in my experience, it actually makes a big difference. Where if you can get it into your head that this is something that I want, or maybe it's something that you don't want. Mm-hmm. If you're drinking and you want to stop drinking, but you haven't quite been able to get there yet, why do I drink? It's really not good for me.
I choose to drink beer.
Right. Right. And that's okay. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're trying to stop, maybe you need to look at it in a different way.
You have to have the power of choice. It's not like I shouldn't be drinking beer. I shouldn't be drinking wine. I shouldn't be smoking. It's I choose to. And I have the power of choice.
Right. And do I really want to? Which is more important to me? Absolutely.
Now what's the third law?
Third law is make it easy.
The old easy button.
Yeah. So this one makes a lot of sense to me as well, is that the reality is that we do things that are easy. He actually calls it the law of least effort. Inherently, people are kind of lazy.
We are.
I mean, that's just how we're wired. And it's not that we can't do hard things, and it's not that we won't put the effort in. But if push comes to shove, at the end of the day, if there's two things that I can do and one of them's easier than the other, more times than not, you're probably going to choose the easier option. There's a great graphic that I saw. Think about people that design parks and landscapes and where people walk. How many times have you seen the sidewalk going one direction and then there's this path through the grass that cuts through? And that's where all the people actually walked. Well, obviously, that wasn't the original design, but they do it because it's shorter and it was easier.
A cool example that I was at school at Mizzou in the early 90s, and they built a new building on campus, and they purposely left the grass in between the building
they just left it grass and let the students walk. And so the students made their own path. And once they wore it out, then they closed the area down and they built a sidewalk there, which is still there today.
Right.
And nobody walks off the sidewalk because that's the path. And it wasn't at a perfect 45-degree angle, but it's where people were walking, and that's how they laid it out. And I thought, yeah, well, they should do that more often.
Right, exactly.
See where they go and build the road.
So the whole idea behind making it easy is recognize that that's kind of what is going to happen anyway. And so use that to your advantage. And so we talked earlier about the idea of if you're starting to work out or whatever, make that as easy as possible. If you want to go to a gym, don't pick the gym that's across town. Pick the gym that's next to your house or next to your business so that it's easy to get to.
Or put it in your basement.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Whatever it is that works for you, but find something that's as easy as possible because that's going to make it more likely that you're going to be able to adopt that new behavior. You know, likewise, don't feel like you have to immediately go out and do an hour's worth of workout. Do 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And he gives an example of a guy that wanted to change his behavior. He wanted to be a healthy person, but he was overwhelmed with the gym, kind of your point earlier. And so he basically said, I'm going to go for 5 minutes. That's it. And for the first 2 weeks, that's all he did. And then finally, at the end of that 2 weeks, he's like, well, you know what? I'm here. I might as well do something. And so then he started doing something, and maybe he was there for 10 minutes, and then he went to 15. By the end of a year, he'd actually lost 30 pounds, you know, and he got to where he enjoyed going to the gym, and it was something he did, and he kept reinforcing that identity of he was a healthy person who goes to the gym. And you keep kind of placing those votes, and it's a very slow process, but it can make a big difference.
It's starting small with what you can handle emotionally that doesn't throw you out of your comfort zone.
Right.
That you can begin, say, okay, let's try, and we're going to sit down, and if we're going to be a writer, you want to write a blog post, let's write
start
for
writing a journal.
Let's write for 5 minutes today. Yep. If you can write for five, then maybe you can write for 10, and next week you can write for 10 a day.
Yep.
If you can get 10 minutes all day next week, then maybe you can go to 15 minutes a day.
Yep.
And you kind of find out, and then you get, oh, I want to do 30. I can't do 30, but I can do 25. We stay at 25. Then what can I do with those 25s that I've written, and how can I begin to create a blog post? And I kind of found what fits, and that's with any activity, is to start small with what you can do, and then you can build up to it. And
meanwhile, you're basically casting votes. He uses the terminology of casting mm-hmm. votes for yourself that you are a person that writes.
Yes, I am a writer. You identify that I am a writer, and how if I'm a writer, then I better write.
Right.
And I like one thing he said in here is the compounding of habits. So habit compounding is a big deal.
And I think you see that all the time where all of a sudden somebody that didn't do anything healthy before, but now they're starting to do something healthy. Well, now they're identifying as a healthy person. Maybe a salad every now and then is okay. You start opening yourself up to other behaviors, and it does build on top of it. And it's much easier to start building those together than it is than you might think. So if you can make some changes, you make a lot.
What's the fourth law of behavior change?
Fourth law is make it satisfying. And really, the first three laws about what does it take to start something.
Okay.
The fourth law is really what does it take to keep doing it. Mm. Make it satisfying really ties into the idea that we're all unfortunately wired for instant gratification. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the things that we do that are bad for us happen to also have a lot of instant gratification. So that bag of Doritos, those taste great. You feel really good when you're eating them. Now, you may not feel great afterwards, but it has instant gratification. A lot of the things that are hard don't have instant gratification. So saving money doesn't really have any instant gratification. Yeah, I'm going to be better off 20 years from now. Doesn't do anything for me today, and actually, maybe it feels bad in the moment. So how do you tie that instant gratification to saving money? Reward yourself. Find a way to tie an activity to that. He uses the example, let's say that I'm spending too much on going out to dinner, mm-hmm. and I decide behaviorally I want to stop going out to dinner. Well, if I choose not to go out to dinner, then I'm going to set aside $25 for a trip that I want to take. And I can see the progress of the trip. So I get the instant satisfaction of seeing progress towards this trip, and I've stopped going out. Or I'm going to put that money towards a coat that I want to buy, or a car, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But find ways to use that idea to help change your behavior so that you're working with it rather than against it.
And again, the rewards have to be immediate. They have to be specific, and they have to be clear.
Yeah. And it has to be meaningful to you.
Yes.
You know, what's meaningful to me may not matter to you.
And they don't always have to be food related.
Right. No. Yeah.
I see a lot of times this, you know, they'll If you make a sales call, you get an M&M.
Right. Well,
okay, why don't I just move a marble from one jar to the other jar?
Right.
And you can tie those in, and you can find these loops that these are the things I have to do every day. You know, if I walk a mile, if I want to walk 2 miles a day and I do it, then when I'm done with my walk, then I get to put $5 towards this new pair of headphones that I really want at the Apple Store. And if you can do your habits and reward it, then whenever you get those walks in, but you also can tie it in. Every day I walk, I get to put that $5 in, but any day I miss, I have to take $15 out.
Right.
Or $25 out, however much you want to make the penalty, and then you want to stay on that reward and go after it.
So he uses an example of that. Would another example would be just habit tracking. So we're all kind of wired to want to win.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the examples he uses is this concept of habit tracking. Of every day I do whatever behavior it is I do, I put a big red X on the calendar, and I get to the point where I don't want to break the string. And Jerry Seinfeld famously used this as his way of writing jokes, is mm-hmm. that he would write jokes every day and he would mark it down and he would go for weeks at a time, but he didn't want to not be able to, you know, put the X on there.
Yeah, he wanted to keep his habit going.
Right. And so that actually helped reinforce that. And then your point about being able to keep track of it. And there's just something about wanting to be able to see that visual progress that alone can be enough to kind of keep you on track with things.
It is. It can be. And also, in it, you're going to see it. It's out in the open. It's somewhere you're going to see it every day. Put it by your sink in the bathroom.
Yep.
Put it in your office on the wall. Put it somewhere you're going to see it. Don't hide it in a journal or a book or hide it somewhere where you have to go find it. Just leave it out in the open that you can see it.
Make it visible. Well, and that was the other idea that he suggested is, find an accountability partner.
Mm-hmm.
So if you share that with somebody else, mm-hmm. even to the point where, hey, if I screw this up, then I want you to send me an invoice for $200 or, you know, I want you to hold on to my money. And if I screw this up, then you donate that money to a charity of your choosing, that kind of thing, where you've got somebody else holding you accountable.
Yeah. Looking at your progress, either every day or every week, they sign off on it that you actually did it. But it has to be somebody that can actually verify you did it, not somebody that's, you know, that you can lie to them or stretch the truth a little bit. That,
yeah,
I walked 5 days this week knowing you only did it 3.5.
Right. Right, exactly. So that's make it satisfying is the idea that, you know, is there a way to continually to reinforce that?
So how do we round out this book and give us a quick review of the topics and round this out on any final thoughts that you have on atomic habits?
You know, I think part of it is just understanding how behaviorally works, you know, how do we work from a behavior standpoint? And this idea of the habit loop to me was kind of an interesting idea. The real progress isn't made by, you know, having this big thing happen. It's actually made by making small, tiny steps every single day and getting a little better. So I think for me, part of it is just that idea of if you want to succeed, you start small and you gradually set your direction and you go where you want to go and you'll get there. If you're trying to do really big things all at once, it rarely works out. It
takes a lot of energy.
Yeah, and it's overwhelming. And so there's a lot of good reasons, I think, to take this approach of making these tiny atomic changes. That's why he called it what he did. To me, the other thing to keep in mind was this identity base changed.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to that idea of it's who you want to be. It's not what you want to have. So it's all about being somebody that you want to be as opposed to what you want to have out of it. And then the idea is habit stacking, temptation bundling, and the environment changes. Those are all ideas that you can use right away in terms of being able to make impacts on your behaviors, whether that's adding something new or taking something away. So I thought all of those were really powerful ideas.
And I think to add on to this was, I was reading an article last week about happiness and how people are happy with themselves. And as human beings, we tend to focus on the negatives of the things that we don't do well.
Right.
And we look at all of our weaknesses that we have and we try to get rid of weaknesses.
Somebody can tell you 10 positive things and one negative and you'd only focus on the negative.
And how do I fix the negative? And it's just how we are as humans.
Right.
And so our weaknesses, sometimes we spend way too much time on our weaknesses trying to eliminate them. Where we really just need to get the weaknesses to a neutral. But eliminating a weakness doesn't make you happier.
Right.
What makes you happier is making something you're good at better.
Yeah.
And improving on a strength because it's something you love to do. It inspires your soul. For some folks, if they have to paint every day, that's just who they are, that's their identity, and they get fired up from that and get charged from that, and that's their life. Other people would hate to paint every day,
right.
But they would rather go run 5 or 8 miles a day because they identify as a runner and that's who they are. But working on those strengths to become a better runner or a better painter is more important for that person than trying to become, if they're a painter, trying to become a runner, or a runner trying to right. become a painter. If they don't identify with that and they don't have a strength in that and it's not something they want to do, but they're trying to do it because they see it as a weakness they're trying to overcome in their life.
And if you play that idea out, the idea that if I work on my weaknesses, at best I can become average, right? Mm-hmm. If I work on my strengths, I can be exceptional, at least in that area.
Yes, and you're happier.
Right.
And that's the whole point.
It's your identity, it's who you are, it's all those things that make you you.
Yes. Great book.
Yeah, it is.
Atomic Habits, it's well worth the read. A lot of books I read I don't recommend that aren't great. You know, there's a book, The Power of Habit. It was an average, okay book. It didn't have a lot of...
It really set the stage for this one.
It did.
Yeah, this one's better.
This is a better launching off point. Atomic Habits, a better follow through, a better piece. So I recommend that you check this out and take care of it. Thanks for being here today, Sean. I appreciate it very much. Any closing thoughts before we wrap up?
No, I think you hit on the high points. It's definitely worth reading and you should check it out.
Yeah, and again, your website if anybody wants to sign up for your business book review each month.
AspireKC.com.
Cool. Thank you so much. We appreciate you being here. Thanks for listening to Let's Make Work Optional from True Wealth & Company. I'm your host, Brian Sarf. With me this week has been Sean Kincaid from Aspire KC. We'll be back next Tuesday morning at 5 a.m. Be sure to spread the word about this podcast to your friends and family, and don't keep us a secret. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, connect with us on LinkedIn, and don't ever forget, invest wisely, save early, give generously. Let's make work optional.
You've been listening to Let's Make Work Optional from True Wealth & Company. Visit us online at retirewithtrue.com or call 913-653-TRUE. That's 913-653-8783. All matters discussed during this program are for informational purposes only. This podcast in no way shall be construed as a solicitation to sell securities or advisory services to residents in any other state than Kansas or where otherwise prohibited. Topics should be discussed with your advisor prior to implementation. Advisory and insurance services offered through True Wealth & Company, LLC, a registered investment advisor in the state of Kansas.